Tanya, I'm an alcoholic. Can everyone hear me? I'm the only one with a hearing problem, so I can't hear myself. Anyways, I'm very thankful to be asked to come up and speak tonight. I have not done this in front of a large crowd, so you guys are my first. And so take it easy on me, please. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I came from a very abusive family. My mother was young when she had me, 16. And she didn't know, I believe she didn't know any better. She was very abusive and did a lot of crazy things to me and helped me to come to a place where I felt guilty for everything. Everything was always my fault. I could have prevented this, that, and the other. I had a lot of shame. We did a lot of things like what happens in this house stays in this house. So anybody could knock on the door and we'd open it with smiling faces no matter what was happening behind closed doors. That is a bad habit for me even today to let myself be known as far as how I'm feeling and not to cover things up. I suffered a lot of sexual abuse, which is not uncommon with us women and alcoholics. At the age of 13, I decided that I was going to kill myself and wasn't quite sure how I was going to go about doing it. Didn't have a knife or a gun or anything like that. Besides, that was too gruesome for me, so I wanted to go out the easy way. Only problem was I didn't have a lot of resources. I thought of asphyxiation would be the best way to do it, and I went into our little shed and poured gas all around me and made sure there was no air coming in and just kind of sat there waiting for the fumes to take me over. Only problem was, I liked it. So every night I took a little longer taking out the trash. It wasn't long before my family caught on. I mean, I smelled like gas. I mean, my family was very upset with me. My stepdad at one point told me as I was coming back into the house, he was like, well, if you wanted to kill yourself, I'll just hand you a match right now. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because right then I had this fight. Well, hell no, I'm not killing myself. You know, just to, in spite of you, I'm not going to kill myself. I'm going to live to be 105 to torture you for the rest of your life was my thinking. But by then it had become a pretty big habit. My mother caught me at one point, and the police ended up being called. The police officer told my mom that I should probably go to rehab. At the age of 13, I went to rehab. They did not know what to do with me. I didn't quite fit an alcoholic, and I didn't quite fit an addict, but I had a problem. So I went to both meetings. One of the things that happened, me being so young there, they gave me a nickname. They called me Unleaded. And for a long time, I was very bitter about it. But now I think it's quite funny. My mom came to visit me once at the rehab, and she came drunk. And if any of you guys have experienced the luxury of being in rehab and watching them try to admit your parents, it's horrible. My mom, the lady who was my psychiatrist at that time, told my mom that if she didn't give up custody of me, they were going to make me a ward of the state. And my mom reluctantly agreed to let me come to California to live with my grandparents. When she came to bring me my stuff, she brought them in a big garbage bag. And as soon as she got to the front of my door, she ripped the bags open and kicked my clothes all over the floor and said, you know, pretty much the things she normally said to me. She wished I wasn't born. She hated me. I'll never be nothing. I won't be shit. Those kinds of things. And I really believed that. I thought that, you know, if your own mom is telling you that, then that must be the case. I let a lot of things happen to me because I thought I deserved it. I didn't think that I deserved any better. And it took me a very long time to get to a point to realize that maybe I'm worthwhile. When I was 17, I graduated from high school, and when I got home that night, my parents gave me an ultimatum to either go find a job and go to school full time, or I had to be out of their house by noon the next day. And thankfully for me, I had some relatives who came to see me graduate. I had also had a boyfriend who had proposed to me, although I thought, you know, I'd wait a few years to get married. Just kind of pushed things a little. I had to get my mom's permission in order to get married. And getting married, I don't know. I didn't get married because I was pregnant. I didn't get married because I was in love with my first husband. I got married because I said I would. That's what my 17-year-old mind told me was the best thing to do. I said I would, so I'm going to stand by my what I said. He and I were both kids when we got married. We did a lot of stupid stuff, drinking. I got to drink more often at that time. In fact, when I found out I was pregnant with my first daughter, my way of celebrating was to get a bottle of cold duck and drink it all, then pick up the phone and call my mom and tell her I'm pregnant. And I decided to prop myself up on a chair for when my husband came home so that I could judge his face, if he was happy or not, you know. He was happy. Nobody ever said to me, "Why in the hell are you drunk?" Nobody said anything indicating that what I was doing was wrong. It is only now that I've been sober that I've been able to look back at that and go, "Holy cow." You know, who does that? I do. My marriage did not last very long. Because we were so young, we didn't treat each other very well. Namely, he didn't treat me very well. And by the time I got to a point where I could ask myself, how much more can I take? When am I going to stand up for myself? When am I going to stand up for my daughter? I had to pray about that. Had to go on a little binge drinking for a little while to get my courage, and I was able to say I want a divorce. Walked through my divorce. My divorce was handwritten. Took many months. Shortly after we divorced, he died, and that devastated me. You know, here I was so excited that I stood up for myself. One for the team. I finally stood up and you know, he passed away, and he died, unfortunately, in a manner that I wasn't good. So I ended up telling myself that I had no right to be upset with him because he's dead, and that I needed to try and be a grown-up about the situation. The circumstances were such that I did go hire a lawyer on my daughter's behalf because of the way he passed away. And I was very, very battled inside as far as, you know, this man, he didn't treat me very well. Why in the hell do I have to stand up for him? And conflicted with the thought of nobody deserves to die that way. I don't care who they are. And I need to stand up for my daughter. So to help with those feelings, I drank. The truth is, I drank because it was Monday, I drank because it was Tuesday, I drank because it was sunny, I drank because it was raining, to be quite honest with you. But I gave myself excuses. Well, he died, so I can drink now. Poor me, for a long time. My poor kids have had to hear many, many, many nights of me wailing, crying, throwing a fit, feeling sorry for myself, them looking at me helpless, not knowing what to do. Me feeling like I didn't know what to do but to drink more. I used drinking at that time to help me get through life. I didn't think that I could get married again because if I did, you know, they might kill themselves or they might die. I don't know. And I held on to that guilt for a long time and that worry, that fear. And 10 years passed and I had gotten remarried. The person I married, of course, was a drinker just like me. In fact, we were drinking partners. We were drinking buddies. We did everything drinking. He's my next-door neighbor, so you can tell I'm really shy. Anyways, we ended up getting married in about a year or so after that. I had to go to trial for my first husband's death, and all the, all the weight that I had carried as far as not grieving, because I thought that was the best thing to do, not to grieve until it's all over, until everything's said and done, then I can exhale. To shut everybody off, not talk about anything, to drink, to stuff it down, came out in a big rush. Pretty much I had a nervous breakdown is what I did. I drank. It kicked my drinking into overtime. I, at one point, was weighing 108 pounds. And if you can imagine me weighing 108 pounds, almost 15 pounds lighter, I looked like death. I made sure that nobody took pictures at that time because I looked horrible. I couldn't do anything but drink. I cried all the time. My kids would sneak and call my mom and tell her that I won't stop crying. I did things like bring pots and pans out and bang them on the ground and scream and curse God and all this other stuff. Did a lot of crazy things, and my sponsor has helped me to realize that my drinking got me through it. Maybe I was supposed to be drunk. Maybe I wouldn't have lived if I didn't have something that I was leaning on. I know that drinking's not the answer and not the way to go, but at that time it saved my life. My husband came home from a long trip. He was in the Navy, so he was out to sea, came back. He told me, take care of things, and I said, fine, bring it on. I don't have any more responsibilities other than going to work and coming home, and as long as I had my bottles stacked up and ready to go, everything was going to be fine. I realized at some point that my drinking was getting out of control. I'd mention it here and there to my husband that I think I have a problem. You know, I can't seem to stop drinking, or when I'm drinking, I drink too much, or I'm starting to not remember what happened the next day type of thing. And my husband would tell me, it's okay. You know, you need to just lay off a little bit. You need to only party on the weekends. Don't drink after work, you know. Wait, just have one drink, those type of things. Only problem was is I couldn't. I drank everywhere I went. If it was on a trip and it was going to be more than 20 miles, I had to have a drink in my hand. Scared my children plenty of times in the car, driven home with one eye closed because otherwise I'd have double vision, and that was my great theory. I'll just close one eye. You'll make it. I thought I was a professional drunk driver because by the grace of God, I did not get a DUI, and that's a yet. If I ever pick up a drink, I don't know what would happen, but I did not get a DUI. I did have a car accident, but nothing came of it because it was in a parking lot, and I sideswiped the car, and my old drunk ass sat there waiting for the police to come and arrest me, and decided that they weren't coming. So I went into the grocery store and bought my alcohol inside of my car, uncorked my screw, just uncorked the screw, and then, whatever. Anyways, and started drinking and decided nobody was coming for me, so I might as well go home. That kills me to know that I did things like that. I wasn't very loyal to my husband. My husband had an addiction to the computer. And my thoughts were, how dare you pay more attention to the computer than me? Don't you know what I look like? Don't you know who I am? I can have anybody I want. Don't think I won't try it. Problem was, is I had to live with myself. When I went out and tried to find some sort of comfort in the eyes of someone else, the next day that pitiful and, you know, that incredible demoralization that you do to yourself, you know, where you can't even look at yourself, I couldn't scrub that off, and boy, I tried. I lived in a lot of fear of waiting for the next person to say, hey, you showed your boobs last night, again, you know. I was pretty wild. I know there's a God, because there's no way I should be standing here talking to you guys. I can't tell you how many bullshit fights I started, how many times I, you know, called people out and, you know, ready to fight them, how many times I went to the city by myself and walked around and dared people to touch me. Who the fuck are you looking at? That type of crap. I like I said, I knew that I had a problem, and my husband had come home, and at that point I was ready to do something. I remembered when I was 13 that there was a place you could go to get help if things had gotten out of control. And I had asked my husband, we were getting ready to move to California, here, actually, and I told him, I said, I need to go to rehab. And he said, well, we can't afford it. And I said, well, why don't I go to rehab before we go down to California, or once we get there, let me go to rehab, and then I'll start working. And my husband said, we can't afford it. I came straight from Washington down here, gave myself maybe a week and a half, and started working in Fresno. Went to see a counselor because things were just out of control. I felt like one of those ladies at the old-time circus where they would have the spinning plates on their hands, on the sticks, and they'd have them on each hand and on their forehead and on each foot, and their plates would spin, and they would try and keep them from stop, you know, from not stopping. Otherwise, if they stopped, everything would crash down to the floor, and I felt like that person, that I had too many plates going, and I had to keep them all spinning, and I had to be this person and that person to take care of everybody, and didn't have time to take care of myself. But I knew enough to get a counselor, and she told me what would happen if you went to rehab anyways. And that was a big, huge light bulb moment for me, because I had never considered, nor have I ever thought about going anyways. In fact, once she said it and I thought about it, I felt kind of stupid. You know, I could have done this a long time ago, that type of feeling. One of those mini nights where I started drinking and decided that I wasn't going to stop drinking until my husband turned around from the computer screen to ask me how many bottles I drank. I started on a mission, and at some point I ended up talking to his best friend, and his best friend said, Tanya, he's not going to turn around. You really got to put that bottle down. And I told him, okay, but just this last drink. then I'll put the bottle down. I won't drink anymore. I gotta fill this, you know, I'm gonna fill my cup up and that's it, okay? I drank my drink and I became belligerent with my husband again, one of many times. Started asking him, what do I have to do to get your attention? What do I have to do to make you turn around and look at me? Pay attention. And I went to the kitchen and I grabbed the knife, you know, as a flair for the dramatic, dramatic scenery there. So, of course, I live with the pain of somebody who passed away either by killing themselves or I knew what it was like to have a family member die unexpectedly. I knew what the pain was like because I had to live through that. So to be quite honest with you, I had no intention of hurting myself more than making a statement. But I went and grabbed a knife from the kitchen and I waved it around, told him, I said, what do I have to do? I have to stab myself? I have to kill myself in front of you before you'll turn around and do something about it? And I took off running to my bedroom. Only problem was my youngest daughter was in my room watching TV. And she, numb to us arguing, saw me crying once again and running into the bathroom with a knife. And she let out this blood-curdling scream from the depths of her soul. And I froze. I knew what that scream meant. And I knew that I had made a very big mistake. I knew that I had gone too far. I laid down on the ground and I cried. And one by one, each family member came in and berated me about my drinking. And once again, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. I can't really tell you what they said because it doesn't matter anyways. Wasn't listening to them. What I was listening to was the fact that my daughter had been screaming and I had upset her that badly. And that was never my intention. I knew that I couldn't do things on my own. This wasn't working. I had to change something. I prayed and prayed. I had always thought that, had the notion that whenever I'd fall, I'd ask God to pick me back up. You know, as long as I can, you stand me right back up on my feet, I'll keep walking. I won't, you know, I don't have to look back or down again. Just get me up on my feet, please. God, help me. And I thought for a long time, and I finally had this feeling come over me like, okay, it's done. We've made a decision. There's nothing else to cry about. We know exactly what we're going to do, and we know exactly how we're going to take care of it. And I went to bed that night, and the next morning I woke up still drunk. And I rolled over in bed, and I touched my husband, and I said, please take me to the base hospital. I want to go to rehab. I need to stop drinking. Please take me. And it was President's Day of 2007, and my husband said, no, I'm not taking you. There's nothing that they're going to do for you right now. It's a holiday. I'm not taking you. I said, I don't care what day it is. Please take me to the hospital. They will help me if I ask them. And he told me no. And I got on my knees. And I clasped my hands. And I begged him, please. I cannot keep living like this. I am destroying the girls. Please help me. And he said no. And so I remembered that if I did anything wrong on base, he would get in trouble. So I thought real quick and I said, fine, I'm driving myself. Knowing I smell like alcohol, knowing I'm still half drunk, I'm going to drive myself. If I got in trouble at the guard shack, all I had to do was tell him I'm an alcoholic. I'm trying to get to the hospital. You know, if he got in trouble, that's his ass. It's not mine. I need to do something. And as soon as he heard me say that, he was like, fine, let's go. It was a long drive from Hanford to the Naval Hospital. When I signed in on the sheet, I signed in, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I need help. They ran their test and whatnot, and at about, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours later, they said, "All right, you're good to go to rehab. Have a nice day." Yeah. And I sat there like, "What? You know, do you have any homes that I should try to go to or whatnot?" "Oh, just make sure they accept TRICARE. You'll be fine. You're clear to go to detox," is what they told me. And my husband looked at me like, "See, I told you." And I got in the car, and on the way home, I kept saying, "What the fuck? You know, who does that? Why are they going to let me out? You're supposed to say you have a problem. You're supposed to get help. You know, this is screwed up." I didn't say it so sweetly, though. I had my husband's beer that night because I was not going to drink my drink of choice. And then, you know, he kept asking me, "What are you going to do tomorrow? What are you going to do tomorrow? Are you going to work? What are you going to do?" And I never answered him. And I got dressed the next day for work, got my clothes on, and looked at myself in the mirror. And I just looked at how pitiful I looked. Once again, you know, it's just going to be more of the same. And I said, "Well, I guess this is going to be something I'll have to fight for." So I did one of the hardest things of my life, drove all the way to my job, grabbed my supervisor, and said, "I know I have not been working here very long, but I'm an alcoholic. And if I do not get help now, I will never get help. I know this puts you in a bad position. And if my job is not here when I get back, I understand, but I have to do this now." And the lady who sat across from me was shocked and, you know, said nobody's ever said that to her before, and, you know, she wished me luck and take care of myself. And I drove back to the base, and I went on a rampage, yelling first at the people in the TRICARE office that handles the insurance. How can you leave me high and dry? I asked for help. What kind of place is this? You know, why are you treating me this way? And they got me a nurse. I ran and raved to the nurse who got me a doctor. So by the time he came in, you couldn't understand what I was saying pretty much. I was crying and a bunch of snot bubbles and, you know, exhausted. You know, and he sat down, and he looked at me, and he asked me a few questions. "When was the last time you went a day without drinking?" And I said, "Buddy, I have no idea. 5 years, maybe longer, I don't know. I really have no idea." And he asked me a few more questions, and then he said, "Okay, all right, I'll take it from here. You don't have to worry about anything else. We're going to detox you here in our hospital, and I'll take care of arrangements for you to go to rehab, and you won't have to worry about a thing." And I looked at him, and I said, "Can I go to the store? I ran out of cigarettes. I promise I'll come right back." For some reason, he wouldn't let me leave. They detoxed me. They doped me up pretty good. I don't even remember detox. All I remember is they took me by ambulance from the Naval Hospital to Berkeley, California. They opened the doors, and they told me to get out, and they said, "Okay, you're here." And I said, "Where in the hell is here? Where am I?" You know, and they told me, and I said, "You guys drove me all the way, you know, from Lemoore to Berkeley. That's a long drive, you know." And I knew I was on my way. I went into rehab. I strongly felt like, okay, I'm going to get divorced and I'm going to be sober and I'm going to be able to take care of my kids and the household on my own. I need to straighten myself out. And that's what I told myself. Went through rehab. I'm a big flirt. So yes, I did flirt. Got in trouble for flirting. When I left, I was supposed to stay there 28 days. And me being terminally unique, felt like I can do it in 21. And don't you know? They told me, my counselor at that time told me a variety of things. Told me that I needed to change jobs. That if I went back to my old job, that I would be drinking in no time. She told me I needed to seek emergency marriage counseling. She told me that I should really stay for 28 days. I was a nervous wreck. My husband wouldn't let me leave there, taking the Greyhound back to Lemoore, because I really didn't want to be in the same car with my husband. I was very angry with him. Somehow we made it to Lemoore. Only took me to throw up a few times before he got there to get home. And the drive actually wasn't bad. I don't know. I mean, I had a lot of fear about what was going to happen next. I remember that my counselor told me to do 90 meetings in 90 days. I wish I could tell you I did 90 meetings in 90 days, but I didn't, but I came damn close. Okay? I did what I was supposed to do. I went to meetings. And thank God the Hanford group opened their arms and welcomed me after I got over my shyness. They got to know the real me. They helped me get through things, you see. Although I went to rehab and I had 21 days underneath my belt, my husband was still drinking. And I have to tell you, that is the most horrible, hardest situation to deal with when you are trying to fight yourself and you come home and your husband's passed out on the floor with beer bottles everywhere. Spite works for me. I use spite to the best of my ability. But I don't care what you do. You will not make me drink. And that's what I held on to for a long time. My first sponsor helped me to understand what boundaries are, because I didn't know what they were. My husband and anyone else could push and say and do whatever they wanted. It took me a while before I would make them back up. And I learned that no is a complete sentence. Nobody ever told me that before. I learned to set my, to stay my course, to say, hey, if you do this, I will do this, and back myself up. That is still very hard and scary for me to do, especially in my relationship with my husband. Most anywhere else, usually that's not a problem, but I got to go through the 12 steps. I had another wonderful sponsor who sponsored me, took me through the 12 steps, and it took me a long time to get through those steps. There's a lot of work involved, as we know. You see, it's a simple program. Sometimes it might be a little too simple for most. Simple but hard. There was a lot of things I had to deal with. I suffer from PTSD, and certain things triggers my memory of childhood abuse. I still have nightmares. There's a lot of things that I still have to live through, but I have to live through it sober. I still ask my sponsor lots of questions, and I still have to, and I suppose I will for the rest of my life, because I will never be healed. I'm thankful for all the love and guidance that everyone has showed me. Without you guys, I would not be here, because like I said, I thought I was terminally unique. None of you had a story similar to mine. None of you could top me, and I thought that you guys were certainly strange. You know, I'll hang in here for a while. I don't know if I'm going to make it with these people. They're kind of weird. I'm thankful that I stopped looking in the crowd and recognizing the differences. Because as soon as I stopped doing that, I started opening my ears and was able to hear the similarities. Whether you're a man or a woman, we have a lot of similarities. By virtue of being an alcoholic, number one. But living life on life's terms is one day at a time for me, sometimes 1 minute at a time. I do the best that I can. My sponsor taught me to get on my knees and pray first thing in the morning and pray again before I go to bed. It took me a long time to remember when I woke up that I needed to get to my knees. I thought that was impossible. I said, first of all, the first thing I do when I wake up is go pee. That's the first thing you do. Then you, get on your knees. But no, it does get better if you pray for it. I don't know what to say. I'm very thankful for this program. I am still married. Through my 12 steps, I realized that one of the things I have never done well is share. I didn't share myself. Didn't share my household things. I didn't share my children very well. I always ran. Of course, I didn't call it running. I called it taking control. but I was always the one to leave. I was always the one to, I was always the one to say no. And that maybe I might be grown up enough to stay where my feet are. First, it was for the first year. And after that, my husband and my family has worked very hard to learn to support me, to learn to open their mouths and talk. It has been a slow process, but I see a light at the end of the tunnel. I wish I could tell you that I don't have resentments, because I still do, and I have to pray about that. But things are a hell of a lot better than they were before. And I'm so thankful to have myself back. And thank you for listening. I appreciate it.